Now tuned into the greatest.
The 2021 NBA season has begun, and we're here to give you our season's predictions. It's time to speak it into existence. This is Below the Hardwood. Can you guys just tell me, or if you can remember, what is your favorite NBA Christmas Day game? You can just give me the year, you can give me the teams playing, but what is your favorite NBA Christmas Day game?
That's hard. That's hard to say right off the cuff. I did appreciate the Cavs Warriors game when they're going back and forth. Like, there was one play where Kevin Durant just dunked the ball, and then Kevin Glove just quickly grabbed it and then just launched it down court for LeBron. He just threw it down. It felt like a real pissing contest, and, you know, something fun we want to see on Christmas Day. Just like two giants battling it out while we eat our Christmas ham. It was great.
Christmas ham.
No pork on your fork?
Sure. No meat at all.
Mm.
And I'm not judging though.
Oh no, listen, I was waiting for...
You're not on trial, and I'm not judging, so we good.
Listen, I love pork. Put it on my fork. I have more pork on my fork for me. I think everyone to each his own, but you know, I'm cool with it.
And Dex, your favorite NBA Christmas game or memory, if you have one?
The one I remember, it's kind of a bad memory because Kobe got whooped that game. But Miami came into town and gave him an ass whooping. And you see Wade throwing it off the backboard, LeBron just catching it, left hand, doesn't care, just dunks that thing from like half court pretty much. It was embarrassing, but you know what? It was good for the Miami fans.
He pulled a Space Jam dunk on y'all.
Okay. And Will, your favorite NBA Christmas Day game or memory?
I mean, both of those that Alan and Dexter gave were great. And I was actually going to say the one that Dexter said because, you know, recency bias is everything. And a lot of the young people out listening to the fine program you guys like to call BTH might not remember some of these games I might reference.
Okay.
I'm just a tad bit older than you guys.
Just a smidgen.
Yeah. So I'll keep it relatively recent. You can almost pick any Christmas game with LeBron James in it. He's been in every Christmas game since he's gotten in the league. The National Basketball Association understands where its bread is buttered. And instead of giving you, you know, putting bitter butter in your batter, they just give you better butter.
Bitter butter.
Bitter butter in your batter. Say that three times fast.
Welcome back to Below the Hardwood. I am your host, Ryan Antonio Henry, sitting here with the homies, the team, the compadres, the cohorts, the X-Men, the Avengers, the Fantastic Four, the Black BTS, the Muggles. I'm missing some. Alan, Dex, do you have anything to contribute?
Planeteers.
We're going with the Planeteers. But just like last week, we are the Fantastic Four once again. That means we have a special guest in the building. Just to kind of give you guys an understanding of who this guest is. Today's show features a trailblazer in the music industry. And special guest, correct me at the end if I'm wrong about any of this. Trailblazer in the music industry since he was 15 years old. A professor of the first ever university credited course on hip-hop culture. Former co-host of the only one-hour weekly basketball show in Canadian radio. Director of operations of the world's most unique basketball tournament, Full Court 21. A forward from Rice University from 88. to 92, and the host of the Open Run podcast on wearepress.ca. He is Will Strickland. How about that? Did I miss any spots there? Did I miss anything?
No, I think, you know, other than a couple of NBA tryouts and stuff like that and playing overseas. I would say that your free throw percentage is quite Calderon right now.
Okay. That's good.
All right, I'll take that.
Can I ask you a question about those NBA tryouts? Like, what's the one thing that you could tell people who don't know anything about it? Like, what is the key thing about those trials?
It's way different than what you see on television. Like, you think you can keep up with the speed of the game. The speed of the game at that level is exponentially faster than anything you can imagine. The thought processes, the strength of the screens from even the smaller guys, you know. But what you end up finding out is that you're about to try and take food off of someone's table. And so that's a very serious thing for a veteran in the league who sees some young cat coming in. And I've written a couple of articles on press about my experience in training camp, one in particular called, I think it's Ode to the Undrafted. And was in San Antonio camp and then a camp in this small burg north of the 49th parallel called Toronto, way back in 1995. So having those opportunities to test myself at the top levels, making it as far as, you know, I guess based on my college career, which is ass, but that's for a multitude of reasons. I don't spend a lot of time reminiscing or going, oh, I could have been this, I could have been that. I made the most of the opportunities and still got those tryouts. So, you know, you never know. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander wasn't highly recruited. He wasn't supposed to be the guy at Kentucky. Now he's possibly one of our award candidates tonight because we're doing the openings, the season opener. So I'm sure we have awards to give out. So again, you know, just taking into account that you create the opportunities that you want. Ryan and I had a conversation about like, not letting things happen to you, but you happening to things. And I think my career is a testament to that. I mean, again, I'm not going to break my arm to pat myself in the back right now, Ryan, but you spoke about my career in the music industry, playing basketball, you know, doing these podcasts. What are we doing on this planet if we're not doing what we love? And my life is a testament to that. Is it harder, infinitely harder to do that without, you know, a head start or the game being rigged? Because, you know, I could sit here and complain about it, but even with the game being rigged, I'm beating the odds. You know, it's almost like LeBron being the, his teams being the underdog in 7 or 8 of the 10 finals he's been in. So that means he's ahead of the game, even at 4-6. You know, when you start out with a couple of strikes, just because of where you grew up or where you were born and what you look like, you have to work twice as hard to be half as good in this world. You just do the math and say, I got to excel beyond that. And that's what we try to do. And I think, you know, what you guys are doing here, you know, to make this something that you're doing not just for likes and retweets, but finding, you know, equity and things beyond likes and retweets is the goal. This is your intellectual property. You should get the most out of it. So sorry for the long-winded answer.
No. Thank you. I appreciate that. Bars out here. Those are words. Those are bars. Thank you.
I am a barbarian, if you did not know that.
Wordsmith. All right.
Kyrie woke.
I did want to ask.
Oh, no. Don't do that to yourself, Dexter. Don't do it to yourself. There are levels to this. There are levels. Hold up. Let me put out my sage.
Got to smudge this podcast.
Awesome. Just before we get to the basketball, I did want to ask, Will, just obviously with your background in the music industry, you know, rappers want to be ballers. Ballers want to be rappers. If you could pick an NBA team, past or present, that, you know, kind of resembles or reflects on, for example, the Wu-Tang Clan, is there any counterpart team that you want to put to that?
Well, cash rules everything around me. Couldn't get that money. Dollar bill, y'all. I would say the closest team to a Wu-Tang, 96 Bulls.
96 Bulls, true.
Okay.
I could say that. I mean, they came together like Voltron, much like Wu-Tang did. You bring in one of the greatest rebounders in the history of the game and Dennis Keith Rodman, and you pair him with Scottie Maurice Pippen and also Michael Jeffrey Jordan to create a juggernaut in the 90s, even though the 90s were arguably the weakest, at least the first half of the 90s, were the weakest period in NBA history due to expansion. When you expand the league 6 times in 8 years, you got a watered down drink in the club, my dude. It is what it is. You won the titles. Don't get me wrong. I applaud that. But two things can be true in the same space. And these things are true.
All right.
But I would say, yeah, 96 Bulls.
96 Bulls. Dope.
What's Luke Longley's middle name?
Luther. I don't know.
I was impressed with the rest.
He's a worst
if you didn't know, that's kind of like my thing. I've been doing that for years. I didn't realize it until... I remember I used to do that to our trainer in college, my man, J.J. Roten, who's a great guy. But his middle name is Lewis.
Bye-bye.
Jimmy Lewis Roten Jr. Every time I walked through the training room to get my ankles taped, I'd say that. And he'd say my full name, too. And like, it was just hilarious. But that was, I don't know, it's kind of this thing you do when when you have parents who, when you get in trouble, they call you by your full name. Mm. That's one of those things. But I just turned it into something else.
Yeah.
I turned it into a stage name. I just put my whole name out there. I was like, you know, Al Lewis sounds like somebody who does like an accountant or something like that. So Al Shane Lewis, that guy must be in some type of media or something like that. He must be doing some type of celebrity work, right? You know, right. Al Lewis, not fun. Al Shane Lewis. All right. Well, let's hear what he's got to say.
No doubt.
So, season opener of Below the Hardwood. This is episode 19, and episode 19 is called Speaking It Into Existence. That's why we have the wordsmith with us. It's NBA opening week, and I kind of want to get a little bit of reactions before we go into, you know, speaking, you know, awards and predictions and stuff into existence. So we have New Year's resolutions for the Warriors. I want to hear, what can the Warriors do without Klay Thompson to prepare them for success? Sorry, and make something of the season. Because right now, if you're listening, it's the 27th of December. It is a Sunday night, and the Warriors are 0-2, possibly the two biggest losses to start the season in NBA history. Will, what's your New Year's resolutions for the Warriors? What can they do to get better, to at least salvage somewhat of the season?
Well, I don't want to be the alarmist here, but they are who they are, and they are what they are. Salvaging, you know, I think that's a little heavy-handed right now. I think it's going to take them some time, but, you know, the Warriors, as we once knew them, will never be again. What we fail to realize is that Steph Curry's at the end of his physical prime. He's 32. Now, Draymond Green not starting the season is a big deal. Not having Klay Alexander Thompson there, another big deal. But to take into account that really this is a referendum on Wardell Stephen Curry II. He's never had to carry a team by himself. And it's not even about carrying him to the finals or even to a 45-win season. Carry them, be that guy that carries them somewhere. Not in the lottery, you know, maybe 500, because the cupboard is allegedly bare, even though it's not supposed to be with, you know, your guys. I mean, you have a former number one pick in the draft in Andrew Christian Wiggins. You have a guy who is supposed to be a difference maker when you brought in Kelly Paul Oubre Jr., who went to school with my son, as a matter of fact. They're having a historically bad opening of the season. But I think that's some of the pressure of being on the Warriors. The pedigree of the Warriors in the past 10 years, you know, really, as I say, the past 6.5, 7 years, really, to be honest. So it's almost a decade. You know, there's a pressure when you come in there. You know, you see Draymond, you see Klay, you understand that Kevin Wayne Durant was there. You understand all of that. You're part of that now. And how do you become a part of the legacy of it, or the end of that legacy? So that's tough on the guys that are coming in there, but really it's up to Steph Curry. Like, well, I want to see what happens with Steph this year, the greatest shooter who ever lived.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, this is it. This is his kind of moment where I think you're going to see a bit of slander on Steph Curry's name. And I think my co-hosts, especially Alan, might agree that he hasn't received that kind of criticism yet in his career, but I think you're starting to see it in the first two games already. Obviously, this is first week, opening week. You're going to get a lot of overreactions. Maybe that question is an overreaction and, you know, they get it together. But Alan, can I get your resolution? Anything that is going to the Warriors can look at or salvage this season? Is that an overreaction? Or do you find that they can get it together?
I kind of want to, I think what Will said was really on point, but I also want to echo Steve Kerr. Like, I think they played some of the top teams in the NBA or perceived top teams in the NBA. So coming at it like that, you have to look at it and be like, yeah, those losses were probably expected. I think when you look at what the Warriors are doing and like how you want to grade them, I think expectation is going to be the problem here. If you give them a high expectation of what they can achieve, they're not going to do the same thing. As Will said, it's not the same team. They're missing a lot of pieces. And the one thing I think they need to do, not to say salvage, because I think that might be too hard of a word. I think it's something to kind of be productive in the meantime. What they can do is find that third scoring option. And finding that third scoring option, whether it's Kelly, Paul Oubre out there, because he shot zero. Yeah, he went 0-for-11 in the last two games. You can't be missing three-point shots when the Warriors. The way the sweet basketball that they played a couple years ago, it needs some knockdown shooting. You need to be able to do that. Also, Andrew Wiggins, once again, number one pick, he really needs to define what his career is. And I think he needs to realize that, you know what, maybe role player is what you need to do right now. So he needs to get everything in. So I think it's great that he went in the offseason and put all that weight so he can, like, you know, body some people. But he needs to up his shooting percentage, because now he's shooting like, what, 30% or something these last couple of games. You know, he needs to do a little bit better. And lastly is Wiseman. They didn't trade for him. They didn't trade that piece. They made sure they drafted him. So what they got to do, give him opportunities. I know Steve Kerr was saying, we're going to give him more minutes as these seasons go. Kevon Looney's going to see a diminish in that. But now Marquese Chriss, you lose him in practice. Now he's out for the remainder of the season.
Yeah.
So really kind of pushing the Wiseman idea, getting him real confident in this league, getting him his touches, getting his shots, even though he kind of looks like a bull in a china shop sometimes on transition. But it's to kind of pick up these other pieces. The way Steve Kerr and Steph Curry are talking about these Warriors team and what they're doing, it's like, yeah, they'll figure it out. They're young, and it's very positive the way they are. And it's going to be hard because, once again, you're talking about Steph Curry. So the lens around the Warriors is going to be bright. It's going to be the things that, like, Kyrie Irving got scared of and wanted to leave. You know, it's going to be a lot of that stuff where everyone's kind of watching everything you do. Everything you do is going to be watched in a microscope. So it's going to be hard to figure it out, but hopefully they can. But one thing I have to say that was really funny, I love that video that the Warriors put out of Steph Curry, 5 minutes of three-point shots, 105 made. That is the best. Like, it's great. It's great to watch. It's amazing. But it stinks of, like, we went 0-2. Here's some Steph Curry footage. Distraction. Remember how great he is? Like, it really kind of looked like that. And shout out to the PR team and the Twitter person who put that video together and stitched it to kind of get Warriors fans a little bit of hope in this kind of hard 2020 Christmas season, you know? But yeah, I think eventually they'll figure it out as far as what they are. I don't think I said it before. I don't think they're a contender. I don't think they're a contender for a couple of years. And I think I agree with Will that old Warriors team is gone. It's gone. So what we can see from Steph Curry, I think it's another thing where he can write his own destiny and his career and who he is by himself without the gravity of having elite knockdown shooters all the way around him. So we'll see what he can do. He can carry a team just like, you know, LeBron in 2008, you know, just carrying a bunch of bums to a plus 40 wins. So hopefully we can see that from Steph Curry.
You know what? Although it sucks that Klay Thompson is sitting at home playing 2K, on social media asking guys to help him how to play 2K, but his value just went up, like, tremendously. People are kind of giving, you know, Steph's career at this point on NBA Twitter, saying that the reason why he was this good was Klay Thompson is the best player to have him, to have beside him. And I don't know what's going to happen with Klay. Hopefully, you know, next year he's playing basketball again. He's healthy. He's back. And but his value just skyrocketed. Dex, can we get a New Year's resolution?
I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't want to cut you off, Dex, but I want to know why you think Klay's value just skyrocketed.
Come off an injury.
So from what I'm gathering, you know, Twitter sphere, NBA, the NBA world, people are saying that without Klay, Steph isn't the same guy. And when you don't have Klay on the court, just like both of you had mentioned, he's now kind of like the word for it is just, I don't know, just left out to die.
Let's be clear on this. Hold on. But let's be clear. Steph Curry was there before Klay Thompson, before Draymond Green, before all these guys showed up. And his play, even when he was injured and His ankles were terrible. Nobody knew that he was going to go beyond being the NCAA March Madness darling that he was. That he was showing that Monte Ellis was going to be expendable eventually, you know? And so let's be fair to Steph too. Like, I'm not trying to bury him right now. And I think it's, again, the idea on Twitter and this Twitter sphere sometimes is to pile on. It's easy bake to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Pile on an idea without having real context. And I think that you have to remember before those guys showed up, the promise of Steph Curry was there. You know, they were willing to let go of Monte Ellis despite Steph's injuries. And when he got better, and you know, some people say when he left Nike and went to Under Armour, you know, I don't know. That could be a thing too. And how he was affecting his ankles, but he just became stronger. He became a better player. And then went out to find someone. I think you have to give the front office there, you know, a nod for saying, okay, what would complement Steph better? A Monte Ellis type of driving kick guy who's going to high volume shooter guy? Or someone we know is a catch and shoot guy who plays defense and will make life easier for Steph that has similar qualities to him. But the fact that they found that, and then he found a guy who was the natural player of the year when he came out in Draymond Green as a second round pick, who understood his value in the league was to be the everything man, the glue man, the most important guy on the team. Even though he's not the best guy, he's the most important guy. And you saw that manifest itself when they started winning, you know, getting bounced out of the playoffs by the Memphises of the world during the grit and grind era. So let's be fair to him. I know it's easy, big, again, to say, oh, Steph is nothing. Like, dude, this is the greatest shooter who ever breathed the breath on this planet. And to kind of bury him after two games or even talk about last year, it's on his record, just like losses are on LeBron or anybody else. You know, the years that Jordan didn't, oh, I forgot, he only played 6 years in the NBA. Those things are I think giving some context to what's going on with Steph right now, understanding where he was before that. We just want to see, can he do it now? You know, now he has the experience. Now he's had the championships and the MVPs and all this other stuff. Let's see the value of that now. I think that's more relevant to the conversation than kind of just casting him out because, oh, you didn't do this without blah, blah, blah. Okay, it's fine. He didn't. So what?
True.
Sorry, Dexter.
Nope. Go ahead, Dex.
All right. Hi,
Nikki.
So first of all, hi, Nikki. There you go.
Your face.
Second of all, I'm gonna disagree with Will on Steph being the best shooter. I'm gonna go with Clay. I'm gonna put all my chips in Clay. And as for the Warriors, I think it depends what Bob Myers wants to do. Does he want to win now or later? Because we know Steph Curry's window is closing. Right now, you have a few assets that you could trade off. You could trade off Andrew Wiggins. You could even trade off Draymond Green right now, if you like. I feel like a team would, like maybe Miami, would like Draymond Green there. But if you want to win later, I just say try your best or maybe tank.
That thing is not even an option for Bob Myers. He can't say, oh, we want to win now. No, win now how? Like, you have what you have, and you might have an untradeable contract with Andrew Wiggins left. And then why would Pat Riley take on Draymond Green when he already has Jimmy Butler, who is more of a Swiss Army knife for that team than Draymond Green at this point could be?
I like Draymond on there. Just they need someone to, I don't know. I want like a duo with Bam Adebayo. I like that Bash Brothers Mighty Ducks thing. I like that.
Or guys who can't hit threes.
But they'll bang, right? So I like that toughness that he would bring to Miami, even though they are tough, but he'd bring in more
so
toughness.
Who would they trade for Draymond Green? Put on your GM hat, Dexter. Would they trade?
Hold on, I think it's backwards. let's go Kendrick Nunn. Let's throw in
Are you putting Hero out there? Is Hero
available? No, let's throw in a Duncan Robinson. That's okay. And maybe a pick or two.
What are you drinking or smoking over there? There's no way in hell that Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra are ever letting go of Duncan Robinson. They actually put Tyron Hero in the trade talks. The only reason James Harden is not there on South Beach raiding every strip club in Miami right now is because they would not part with Duncan Robinson.
I think if a Draymond comes up, I think he'll do it. I think Pat Riley will
wait,
do it.
Older Draymond. Are
you sure? Yes. Pat Riley wants to win now.
I'm in a different place right now. He went to the finals with Duncan Robinson. James Harden has never seen the finals. But this man can also be drunk and whatever else he is,
I said
out of shape, and come out and drop 44 and 17. So you're telling me they can part? They wouldn't part with Duncan Robinson for that guy who gives you 44 and 17, but they part with a triple single king. Okay.
Yes, bro. Because he's won a championship. That's what he's bringing.
Listen, championship pedigree. Listen.
You can't bring those.
And defensive player of the year.
Those championships aren't transferable. You can't be like, here you go, 2015.
This is all trade talk that we are going to have at another point. But I like the fighting spirit.
Tyler Hero is the new Klay Thompson.
Moving on. Fact or fiction, guys. Is the Brooklyn Nets, the current Brooklyn Nets, again, this is first week, overreaction week. Everyone's, you know, on Twitter, NBA Twitter, blowing up about, you know, the first two games of the season. The Brooklyn Nets have been on fire. I think just opposite of the Warriors that we just discussed, had the largest two-game point differential. Are one of the largest two-game point differentials in NBA history. Kevin Durant is looking, you know, almost like his old self. Kyrie has come out, and although he had a bad cloud with the media casted over him, he's looking like an artist, just like he said. Do you guys feel that the Brooklyn Nets currently is what we're going to see for the rest of the season going forward? And back to our guest, Will.
They are the star power in the East right now. They have a flavor of the month, 7-11, the whole idea. And you have to respect that both of those guys are champions. So it's a little bit different. It's not just some guys showing up and saying, we're going to win this year because we got Paul. Oh, let me stop. So I think that the way the team is constructed, they're constructed much like those Phoenix Suns teams. And again, I can't compare Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant to, you know, those Phoenix Sun teams, the 7 seconds or less, but they have a lot of that on their bench. And Amari Stoudemire is a coach. Mike D'Antoni is assistant coach. And so what will really show and prove is what they do in the playoffs. Kevin Durant, Kyrie, Andrew Irving, they're going to show up. They're going to play. What about the others? I think that when you are faced with certain situations in the playoffs, it's going to expose a lot of stuff. Will we see DeAndre Jordan play 60 games, 72 games? It's good to have Jared Allen back there. You know, Caris LeVert, you know, who's a starter. You know, Fournier Black, a starter on two teams. You know, so you have a quality bench. You have quality starters. But what about their playoff experience has made you confident in the fact that a team just put together can make it to the NBA Finals? You know, there's one guy, he's an outlier, of course, who can go and just take parts and pieces. Of course, some of the best parts and pieces, but take those parts and pieces and take them to the finals if not win the finals. We haven't seen that from anyone else recently. So that is the task at hand for Steve Nash, or Stephen John Nash as he is, and the rest of the Brooklyn Nets, who have the best City Edition uniforms in the league, hands down.
The Basquiat.
Shout out to Basquiat. No doubt. Chicago joints is a sweet too, though. I like those too.
Mm-hmm. What about Memphis?
Memphis is cool. I think Boston. The idea behind Isaac Hayes and the whole that history with Stacks records down there is very, very big. And I think not everyone understands it, but I think it's a good thing that they've reached into the history of the city to do that.
Yeah.
Dex. This Brooklyn Nets team, you've previous podcasts have crowned them already, your future NBA champions. So do you like what you see so far? Is Kevin Durant still Kevin Durant?
I'm the biggest Kevin Durant supporter. Kevin Wayne Durant, that's for you, Will.
Hmm.
I said they will win the championship, and it's looking it's going to come into fruition. If you put injuries aside, I think the way that they play and the team that they have right now, they don't need James Harden or anything. And to talk about what Will said about the others, as it were, if I see Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving playing at the level they're playing, it, for some reason, like even when I was on the court when I was a kid, like if I saw someone killing it, I want to kill it too. So I would knock down those shots. I would get those rebounds. I feel like the others will see Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving doing their superstar stuff, and like the Joe Harris's and the Caris LeVerts will pick up that slack.
Okay, some little inspiration instead of just sitting down watching two amazing players play
basketball.
What are
you looking for?
Oh, I just realized.
You looking for a rebuttal?
No, I just realized that we were in the land of make-believe when you were talking about you making shots. My bad.
Oh, I'm Clay. I'm an Asian Clay.
Alan, your take on the Nets, again, previously bashing the Nets yes. as opposed to Dexter. So you, two games have that changed your mind.
You know what I called them? I called them Clippers East. It's going to be fun in the regular season and have some troubles possibly in the postseason. But once again, I am a man of if I've been received new information, I can change my opinion based on that new information. But I still don't want to crown them. I feel like it's kind of too early. They had two great wins, amazing wins on teams that were depleted of many stars. We're talking about the Warriors missing all those players. And then we're also talking about Boston missing Kemba Walker because they really needed Kemba Walker that night. It was a close game for a bit and then they lost it. But once again, it's exciting. It's exciting to see Kevin Durant back. It's exciting to see Kyrie Irving kind of playing with him too as well. But I think there's two modes of how some teams start these seasons, and you can kind of see it. Kevin Durant being off for so long, he is energized. He's ready to play. He's ready to rock. Kyrie Irving's ready to match that energy. It's great because he wasn't even playing in the bubble too. And you're seeing a lot of other teams like the Lakers or something like that slowly kind of pick it up. That's kind of their kind of momentum because like, they're always looking for the playoffs. They're always talking about the playoffs. They're not talking about the regular season, at least LeBron-led teams. And I think we can get caught up in this idea that like, oh, the Brooklyn Nets, they're that team. They're going to do it. But I think when you have just the energies of Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, two players who notoriously care so much about their public image and how they're perceived by other people, but they'll do a bunch of other things, that we have all these volatile chemicals like on a truck and there's like a road ahead. And it's like, they may not explode, but just know all those chemicals that like to blow up are right there. And there's going to be a bumpy road ahead. And it's a long season, even though it's a shortened season, it's still a very long season. So when we talk about the Brooklyn Nets, they're going to have a great regular season. That's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of ups, a lot of downs, going to be a lot of that stuff. But when we come to playoff basketball, it's going to be a little different. And I think you're going to see the looking over at the score sheet kind of mentality Kyrie Irving, you know, because when we're talking about Kevin Durant too much, Kyrie Irving's going to want to do something. We're talking about Kyrie Irving too much, Kevin Durant's going to want to do something. And I think all these other players are going to have to kind of watch these two kind of maybe, possibly. Once again, this is all speculation. I'm in the Stephen A. Smith zone right now. You're going to see players like LeVert or Dinwiddie or these guys kind of watch these kind of two bickering like Harden and Paul, just watching these benches kind of like, you know, fight it out and stuff like that. But I don't know. I think it's great basketball. It's fun to watch. I'm happy to see Kevin Durant suited up and booted up and not broken down. But once again, Clippers East. I'm going to stay consistent with that. And because I don't want no video of me later on saying like, you said Clippers East, but now you're saying that you love them. So I'm just going to stay consistent on this right now and say, yeah, fun regular season, but second round exit.
It's easy to get excited. Again, the first week, you watch these games and you're just, you know, saying all this kind of stuff. You rewatch the tape months later and you're just looking back saying, I'm an idiot. I don't think that's going to happen to the Nets exactly. Am I ready to crown them as champions yet? No. But it is exciting to see them back on the court. I do feel that they're a top team in the East for sure. But just like the Miami Heat in their first year, although they did get to the finals, I don't think a chip is in the future just yet. Give them a year or two more to gel, and then we'll see that. Moving on to the Lakers. Again, first two games, they look amazing. The new additions are actually what look amazing. They stole Montrezl Harrell for the cheap in most eyes. 2 years, 19 mil. They have Dennis Schroeder, who before the season started, came out and said, yeah, I'm a starter on this team. The confidence is there. The other two additions, you know, Gasol and Matthews, a little bit slow, but with these additions of Montrezl Harrell and Dennis Schroeder, and obviously LeBron and AD just continuing to dominate their game and their positions, is there any team best suited to take out the Lakers this year? Do we see any team really oppose them last year? Obviously, the media boosted the Battle of Los Angeles, and it was the Clippers. is that still the Clippers the best team, or is there another team? Let's go back to Will.
The team best suited to take out the Lakers is the Lakers.
Oh, okay.
The disease of Moore can kick in. Everybody wanted a contract extension. They got it. KCP got one. Kyle Kuzma got one. They're working on one with Schroeder right now. But the disease of Moore can get to you. And you have to be aware of that, that the hunger that you had to win it the first time may not exist once you start getting comfortable and you're looking good and you're on TV all the time. I mean, it's a glamour team. You know, any team that has LeBron on it will be on television. So, you know, you have to show and prove. But I think the team that can take out the Lakers right now at this point, you know, this early in the season, is the Lakers, you know, depending upon their attitude. They are weakened a bit defensively, especially in the middle. Marc Gasol, like right now, mannequins can beat Marc Gasol off the dribble.
Yes.
Just to be clear.
Yes.
But he's smart. You know, he's going to have some great possessions defensively. But he's there for the playoffs. He's not here for the regular season. The regular season is to get Montrezl Harrell and some of these younger guys. So you see Talen Horton-Tucker. You'll see some of the first Antetokounmpo, whoever won a title in the NBA, Costas to get some time. You'll see Kaycock get some time for them on the court to get them prepared for the playoffs in the event that one of those older veterans goes down in the middle. You're going to need some interior defense that you lost in losing Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee. But like I said, the team right now that I can see taking down the Lakers is the Lakers.
I like that, and it might be true. Right now, even just looking at the other teams, it's, I don't know. The Lakers the other night, almost four players and scoring 20 points each, and it might be a self-destruction thing that will take them out. Dex? Bessie?
It's the Brooklyn Nets.
Okay, here we go.
The Brooklyn Nets going to take them out, and you know why. Kyrie's going to hurt LeBron in the feelings, and Durant's going to hurt him on the court. It's the Brooklyn Nets. They're going to win the championship. I'm sticking with it. I've said this since probably last year, and I'm sticking with it.
Alan, best teams to take out the Lakers.
No, it's not the Brooklyn Nets, because okay. The Brooklyn Nets, to stop the Lakers, they have to go to the finals. You see how that's a problem, right? They can't just stop them from home. They can't just send a mean text every night. Kyrie Irving just tweeting LeBron, just like, you can't do that. You can't, you know, how are you going to hate from outside the club? You can't even get in, you know? But I think I want to add, like, to agree with Will. I think the only thing that can stop the Lakers is the Lakers. And to quote the magnificent Bane, victory has defeated you. I think the Lakers coming off that championship right now, also playing all that basketball up until then. So they have the shortest time frame. So the smallest 72, time to recover. I think LeBron's days. Yeah, the one thing that makes LeBron a superpower, like his superpowers, and what like puts him ahead of like Jordan, I would even say Jordan to this extent, is his longevity and his recovery. That time period that he takes to kind of take care of himself and take care of his body, to kind of know what he's doing, know what he's putting into himself, and make sure he's the best version of himself through the season. I think he didn't get that opportunity, because he was out there in Las Vegas partying up for like a little bit, and then he came back and he's in the league. And I, to be honest, I think he looks a little bigger and not in his game shape self. So I think missing that, not having a proper training camp, all these different things, these big contracts, these seven players, and kind of, you know, in a sense trying to reload, but then kind of reshifting, prioritizing certain things and certain key things, because there's a lot of great things that Dwight Howard did that I don't think Trez and Gasol can do. There's a couple, just Latin, you know, if it's either just that, just keeping high hands up there and just getting the ball, putting it right back in. There's a couple things that are missing from that. But yeah, I think the only thing again their way is themselves. I don't think there is a team right now on paper, personally, that can take the Lakers out if the Lakers are at full force. Lakers are at full force and doing what they're doing. There's no team in this league that can take it.
Let's be clear on something real quick, though. In 3 days, LeBron Raymond James will be 36 years old. So if you watched the air ball free throw, if you watched the runner from three, he is going to be on cruise control until at least mid-February. Don't expect 40-point nights and all. He does not care at this point. Being healthy, relatively healthy, and together and playing well in May and June is going to be most important to this team. So right now, like I said, his birthday is he's going to party. Trust it. But that's why I say cruise control to at least mid-February. Then you'll start to see him kick in because he will be in game shape. The rest of the guys will be in game shape. And I think the way that they keep those guys together, like they did in the bubble, it's going to be different being back home. But I think that, again, winning the championship shows you what do I need to do to maintain this and sustain the greatness that we're trying to achieve again. And it's going to be tough because, again, you don't know. Guys have different ideas. Once they get out in a little freedom, they start thinking, hey, you know, I am the man now. I should be the man on the team. I should be the third scorer. I should be just play.
And you know what? You're right. Preseason, LeBron showed his frustration on social media about the shortest turnover to a season in all four major sports. No Never. Other sport has.
But LeBron has been doing that pretty much a lot of seasons with the Olympics, FIBA. He's had shortened seasons or shortened.
But 70 games, camp. 70 games between winning a championship and game one. Absolutely nuts. And of the four major sports, it's never been done.
And to kind of jump on Will's thing too, like I think he has the ability to turn it on. I don't want to make sure I come out like that because him just tweeting that Christmas Day game and how excited he was like a kid before Christmas Day for toys. And he goes out there and he puts that on that performance. So like he has the ability to do it. But my fear is just like the toll, you know, as you're saying, turning 36, only thing is undefeated is Father Time. And I feel like Father Time might be some type of hindrance in his ability to just turn that key and start that engine and get him ready to go.
When is it going to show up?
I'm a huge LeBron fan. So this is me saying just like, I'm scared personally. I'm just like, I want LeBron to keep doing this until he's 45 and playing with Bronny out there or LeBron James Jr. Like I want him to be able to have that.
I think he's done a lot though to stave off Father Time and not just stave it off and kind of hang on. But here's the best player in the world in his 18th season. That's never been done. We're watching history every day he steps out on the court. And this is not even to put extra octane in his tank. This is the reality that we face. No matter how you feel about it, this is a fact. Like, he shouldn't still be getting up like this. He's still, like, it's crazy that you watch him run the court. How are you the fastest guy going up? Like, I'm dead serious. Like, yeah. That the miles on his legs and just it's amazing. Again, if and when it does happen, we will see a precipitous drop off. It won't be like a steady thing. It'll be something from an injury or something. We're not wishing an injury or anything, but like he does a lot to mitigate those things as yeah. much as he possibly can. And you have to respect his ethic to be like that.
Yeah.
And you look at Kawhi with load management. I think LeBron's load management's different, and it's a very good load management. He knows his body. He knows when he needs to come out. He'll tell the coach when he needs to come off. He'll play the game. He won't sit out, but he's smart with his minutes, and he knows exactly what to do. But enough praise for the king.
We can keep going if you want.
We can hold off.
Father Time is gonna pop up behind the Merlot.
We'll have enough time for that. Obviously, this show, if you've been listening to it, we're based out of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We'd be remiss not to talk about the Toronto Raptors and of course NBA Twitter with their heavy overreactions. Two games in, the Raptors don't look the greatest. They don't look like the team that we've been accustomed to seeing over the last few seasons. Obviously some missing pieces. Serge Ibaka gone. Kawhi obviously gone the year before. Mark Gasol now gone and new pieces coming in. Again, overreaction. Is it time to panic in Raptor land? Obviously striking out on Giannis has made fans a little bit eerie of the future. Are they going to figure this out? Is this a team that can still stay top in the East? Let's go with Dexter for this.
I've said it before. I'll say it again. Trade Pascal Siakam. Do it right now. His stock is high. Harden's is low. Start buying.
Is it really high right now?
Who?
Pascal.
Yeah, trade him.
Buried us in the first quarter, half.
He's just trade him. This is my early prediction. We're going to trade Pascal. We're going to trade him for Harden. We're going to be all happy again. And then we're going to make it to the Eastern Finals.
Okay. Alan?
I think when you look at like the loss, especially the last one, it's not a problem of scoring. So James Harden is not going to fix it. That's not what the issue is. I think the problem is defense. And it's the margin. There's little small things that we kind of miss from having Ibaka and Gasol out there. A defensive presence and a defensive leader. That's not Kyle Lowry. So when Kyle Lowry is off the court, there needs to be some type of like focal point of somebody who puts people in the right positions. And I think the Raptors are missing that. And I think it's sad. It's sad that it came down to kind of missing out on this Ibaka deal with this whole thing with the Giannis and hoping and having space for that. So I think everything kind of stems from that kind of decision, because Aaron Baines and Chris Boucher had great games on paper. Great games on paper, but if you actually like were watching the game or realize it, like we were missing, like especially in the last part of the game, we needed that rebound. We had a bunch of just short guys out there just reaching, and there's one thing you can't teach is height. We need more height out there and more defensive minded kind of players. Even like Aronde Hollis Jefferson, as offensively limited as he was, there was this defensive minded aspect of him that when you put him in the game, he was sending players, he was calling things out. It felt very organic, and I felt like the team was talking to each other and they were moving into positions that they needed to do and slid to where they needed to do and had their hands in, like, you know, the cookie jar went up there in the air for the passing lane. And I think that's what we're missing. We're missing that. And I don't think it's as easy as trade Pascal Siakam, although he might be on the table. It might be something as that. But I think there needs to be an off or mid-season move, because I think once you miss on Giannis, you got to get a little hungrier in the regular season as far as like trades go, because it's come down to it that we just can't entice a free agent to come to this team. So we probably have to trade for one or trade for a good piece. And I think that's what the Raptors need to do. I think we're just missing something at that 5-4 spot as far as intensity. Some things you can't really teach new players. You can't really get that out of them. It's something they have. And I think I trust Masai to make the right decisions going down this season to bring in that piece, bring in somebody that's going to like buy into the culture and be able to prop us up and put us in a position to defend well, because we defended okay, sort of. It's just that we just need that little push.
A Draymond?
Listen, if Draymond's just sitting there and they want Alex Len back, I'd pull that trade. I would for sure pull that trade. They wanted that. But
hey,
I don't know if it's as simple as Draymond, but it could be. It could be a Draymond-like kind of player.
Vocal leader.
I'd like to make a statement or make a note that this may be the only place outside of the Hollis Jefferson home you'll ever hear someone ask for Rondae Hollis Jefferson as help.
Listen,
just as a note. But I want to point that out. So no disrespect to Rondae and his family. I'm sure they're great people, but I don't think you'll ever hear that sentence anywhere else ever again outside of his home.
The one thing that my entire playing career is any sports, so we're talking soccer or basketball, is noting good defense. I love defense. That's my thing. I'm great at it. I'm good at it. I love seeing players do it well. And one thing that Rondae did was defense was well. He grabbed that board, didn't even look to the rim, looked to someone to pass to, kicked it out, and that's what his job was. He knew his role. He did what he did. And that second unit of guys had that mini Kyle Lowry. Not actually Kyle Lowry, but like a little generator. Little Kyle Lowry energy bump. And they would get it from Rondae.
I thought that was Malachi Flynn, who was supposed to be
that
guy off the bench for the – So
I thought it was too.
Like, I'm hearing a lot of different things from the Raptors fans, mm-hmm. and I'll say this: that one, there are no missing pieces. Mm. What you have is what you have, right? You can wish back all you want; it's not going to happen. So why waste your energy and time on that? What you have is what you have. Chris Boucher had a career night the other night, and you're still saying he's not the answer. Well, guess what? He had to answer the question, because he's what you got, unless you want to put in the great Alex Len in the middle. So I thought they just gave $72 million to OG Anunoby, a good 3-and-D two-way player. They gave him $72 million for a reason. They just re-upped Fred VanVleet for $85 million. You know, Norman Powell, who has a very friendly contract, but he's also been one of your best defensive stoppers over the past, since he came in the league. What they had, Damari Carroll on this team, they had Anthony Leon Tucker Jr. You know it better as PJ. Yeah. You know, you had those players on the team that were supposed to be LeBron stoppers, and you end up throwing a 6'3" guy on him in his rookie year. So don't discount the value of Norman Powell to this team. But at the end of the day, when you talk about free agents, Alan, the main free agent they need to sign is Masai Ujiri. Mm-hmm. Because Masai Ujiri is the man who makes things happen for that. He brought culture to this team, to this country, for this team. And when I say culture, I'm talking about the winning culture. And you give Dwayne Casey his flowers. You make sure you give Nick Nurse his flowers. Bobby Webster is about to get signed to his deal if he hasn't been signed already. But if Masai Ujiri is offered an ownership stake in the Stripes in Washington, D.C., Ted Leonsis, because his wife is from D.C., that is going to be catastrophic for the Toronto Raptors, because as nuts as Bobby Webster is, as much as they're trying to fast-track other people in that front office, the key to everything in Masai you must trust. And if they don't take care of him, it doesn't matter who you don't have in the roster this year, what you can possibly have. You know, Kawhi, a free agent next year, maybe he comes back home and people don't burn it. You never know. But all I'm saying is that doesn't happen without Masai Ujiri. I really don't believe that. And he is going to be the draw that brings you that top free agent, because you're going to have the cap space. You're going to have, you know, the ability to bring in somebody who's top next year that fits into your program. But right now, you have what you have. Make sure you – Nick Nurse had to do his best coaching job ever.
But wouldn't you agree
for the
that
Raptors, but also for the Canadian national team, if they end up going to the Olympics or not?
Yeah, but wouldn't you agree, like, with Giannis gone, it's kind of slim pickings as far as the 2021 free agent season? No,
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 no. I don't believe so. I don't believe so. Toronto Raptors are still going to compete in the East. They're going to be between, I'd say, a 4 and a 6 seed throughout the year, and competing in that area, because you can't, when you have championship DNA. You have that pedigree. They're going to compete. They still play together. They still play hard. Some nights are going to be tough to look at. Other nights are going to be like, they're world beaters. But that's what you get when you have a team like this. You still have Kyle Lowry. You still have VanVleet. You still have guys who were developing the 905 system, the best G League team in the NBA. Right. You know, you get Siakam, VanVleet. You get Norman Powell. Those guys have regular time down there. You still have guys who are on that 905 team playing significant minutes around the league, whether Jakob Poeltl and guys like that. You see Chris Boucher was there. So, again, you have to trust in your system, and you want to make sustainability part of your culture as well. You're not going to win every year. I know there's an expectation once Kawhi left that somehow they'd make it back. But, again, they were still a playoff team. They made it to the second round, a playoff team, right? That's what they had traditionally been doing for the most part. And, you know, outside of the 2016 season when they went to the Eastern Conference Finals, they were 2 games away from the NBA Finals. They made a move. Okay? They knew it was a rental. They got Kawhi. You know, they lucked out. They got what they wanted. Now, you have to be – and I guess you can be a little selfish as a fan once you win a championship. But guess what? It's about to be 2021. 2019 was a couple of years ago. Let it be. Develop Siakam. Or move them, develop Boucher or move them. Guys are so fickle, you know. Oh, fandom is the funny thing, too. But Siakam is going to be okay. You just realized last year he was not an A1 from day one type guy. He's not the number one guy. He's maybe a number two or number three. And that's fine.
Yeah. I've said on the pod, like, he's only been playing basketball for how long? So I feel like all the problems that we saw in the bubble, those were just kind of bubble problems. And then him figuring out how to play basketball within a vacuum, being able to be the best version of himself, regardless of circumstances around him that he can't control. So I've never feared Siakam, what we saw against Boston. I don't fear what that's truly him. I think there's only an upside to what he can do.
Or did he have one good year and everyone's hyping up that Euro step that he got?
Oh. I think that I think those are both fair positions. I think those are both fair because, again, the difference between having a guy like Kawhi to take some pressure off you can do your thing. Like, he came out with a 32-point first finals game, you know, but he was a finals MVP in the G League too. So, again, You can't make it, but it's like being a kid or a teenager. When you want to be an adult, you act like an adult. But then when you want something and you want it to go your way, you want to be a kid. You can't do that now.
Yeah.
You can't do that with the NBA. You can't. He is a grown man in the NBA who's the most improved player, one of the best players in the finals in 2019. He has to figure out, and sometimes you have that shock that everybody knows he's not a surprise now. He has to adjust to that he's not a surprise. He's one of the top players, at least the top 50 players in the NBA. There's 450 players in the NBA. 450. That's it. If you're in that top, like, 1/9, you're doing okay.
Yeah.
And he's in that. So, definitely. You know, don't cash out your chips already.
At Dexter.
To close
for
this
James
out.
Harden, I'm doing
to close this out, I will actually agree with Will. The panic is ridiculous. The most important piece, obviously, with Giannis off the table is keeping Masai, because he's the guy that has made it happen time and time again, and he will do this again for sure. So I will sign off on that. This is, again, season premiere episode, episode 19 of Below the Hardwood, joined by Will Strickland. We will be back for the second half.
That was part one of our two-part season premiere of Below the Hardwood. For our predictions and to see who the best of the East and West will be, check out part two, which is the next available episode. Thank you.